Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, May 30th. I'm Lauren Schmidt, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Southern Humboldt veteran returns to Normandy for 80th anniversary of D-Day. Researchers are celebrating the importance of kelp in Mendocino. And Congressman Huffman on Trump's criminal case, extremists in the Supreme Court, and the invasion of Rafah. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. Southern Humboldt's oldest living veteran, George K. Mullins, a World War II staff sergeant in the 101st Airborne Division, is returning to Europe for the 80th anniversary of D-Day and the Battle of Normandy. This journey is made possible by the Best Defense Foundation. Vets will experience 12 days of celebrations, remembrances, and commemorations in honor of the liberation of France and Europe and their historic return. At 99 years old, George Mullins is preparing for his flight Friday afternoon and spent Thursday morning speaking with KMed News, sharing more about his life, experiences, and reflections from the last 8 decades, and explains why this trip is so special.
Oh, this anniversary? Yes, the 80th. 80 years since they got their liberty, since they got their freedom. Hey, these people, well, France had been living on it 5 years. The people of Germany had lived under it 12 years.
On June 7th, 1944, George landed on Utah Beach and was among the liberators of Saint-Côme-du-Mont and Carentan. In Operation Market Garden in Holland, he earned a Purple Heart for wounds received on November 9th, 1944. He was also with the 101st Airborne in the Battle of the Bulge, and later went into Germany, crossing the border into Austria to Hitler's Eagle's Nest in Berchtesgaden, Germany.
Yeah, well, I seen that. I seen more than that. I was there at D-Day. Well, I went on Utah. My third day I was in the night. That just about did me in, boy. That really wrecked me in the brain, and it wrecked me tired. It was so... It does something to you to be in one of them barrages. Well, 43 of the men lay there dead and wounded. I wasn't one of them, or I wouldn't be here. They were my sergeants and boys that I knew. Oh, yeah, I'm a lucky guy for a lot of reasons. It was 80 years ago.
With support from the Best Defense Foundation, George's journey starts again on June 1st, with veterans arriving in Atlanta, Georgia for a kickoff dinner, before departing to Normandy on June 2nd to commemorate the 80th anniversary. This trip will last until the 12th and is jam-packed with events and celebrations. George will be accompanied by his best friend, Jay, another fellow veteran who has a full itinerary for the 99-year-old.
Lots of just celebrating veterans. George, again, as was stated, George is probably the most humble guy I've ever known. Based on what he does, he doesn't really see any of it as just, that was George, that was my job. He doesn't look at it in the larger sense of things. Perfect example, you guys have been talking about this now for a few minutes, and not once has George mentioned that the town of Carentan has asked him to speak. So at the parade, George is the parade, basically. You know, he's one of the last living airborne guys who were there and did the fighting and freed those people. So you know, that's part of our itinerary. We will, we always go to visit the American Cemetery there to honor those that died. In George's book, we wrote about the first guy that he knew of to die from his group, a guy named William LeMaster. Well, I found his grave, so we'll be going to his grave to pay our respects. We also are under the understanding that we'll be at an event with all of the dignitaries, President Biden, the president of France. I don't know what other dignitaries will be there, but it's a big deal. I mean, you know, the English will probably send a prime minister or somebody there, you know, from their group. We don't know that. Most of this is just to kind of honor veterans, celebrate veterans, and celebrate what they did for the people of France.
Especially them that didn't come home.
Yeah, alongside the people of France, you know, because in my experience, it's a very interesting thing to observe the reaction of the French people to these men. In this country, I mean, we always walk it. When we find out an old guy is a vet, we always try to remember to say, hey, thank you for your service. As a veteran, when George goes to France, these are people that are hugging him, kissing him, just they want to take him home. It's just really a very different way of looking at it and seeing how people respond. And that's understandable. As an American, our country's never been invaded. We don't know what it's like to be bombed 24/7 for months at a time, or to know that our loved ones have been killed because of what they are, not for any other reason. Whereas the French, you know, they haven't forgotten. They do not forget this, and they make it a point to remind all the generations that, hey, without these guys, you one might not be here, and two would be living under a very, very different kind of life.
You know, President Biden is going to be at this event. If you get an opportunity to speak with the president, what would you say to him?
Well, what should I say to him? I'll meet him there. I would tell him it was a pleasure to meet him, and that he's able to get there, and he's not too old to be a president. A few things like that.
George, about a month ago, had a letter drafted for him that he sent certified mail to Joe Biden, inviting him, telling him how much he thought he should be there. And sure enough, he's gonna be there. So I really hope the two of them do get to meet. What I do know George will do if he does meet Biden is he's gonna hand him a book called Foxhole.
Jay is referring to George's memoir, which he published in 2021, titled Foxhole. It details George's journey from his isolated home in the Appalachian Mountains of Virginia to the beach in Normandy. Mullins shares his thoughts as he witnesses the devastation of war and develops friendships with comrades in arms. Mullins' two-week tour starts tomorrow, but he stated it's an emotional journey, not a vacation.
As is be with the spirit of the guys that didn't come home.
George K. Mullins, Southern Humboldt's oldest living veteran, has lived more lives than most ever will. Mullins, born in 1925, was raised in the Appalachian Mountains by his two parents, who were homesteaders, not out of choice, but out of survival. In the 1960s, Mullins moved to Humboldt County to start a new life where he logged, fished, and later learned the joys of cannabis. But for Mullins, there was one chapter in his life that was too extraordinary not to share with the world. And it began when he was 18 years old in 1943 and lasted for 2 years, 2 months, and 11 days. His time in the service during World War II would shape George's life forever. KMA News will bring you the full interview with Mullins on the anniversary of D-Day. The Humboldt Trails Council will be hosting their Trail Summit on Saturday, June 1st, from 9:30 to 1 p.m., taking place at the Sequoia Conference Center, featuring local speakers and Senate President Mike McGuire. For more, we spoke with one of the organizers.
Yeah, my name's Carol Vandermeer, and I'm a projects coordinator at Redwood Community Action Agency, and I've been part of the planning team for the Humboldt County Trails Summit that's going to take place this Saturday at the Sequoia Conference Center. And doors open at 9:30 with a really cool trails resource fair where you can meet and talk with 18 different trail supporting organizations. And then at 10:30, we're going to have presentations about all kinds of very exciting trails projects happening in our area, including a beta zoo project the city of Eureka is doing, the city of Arcata's effort to continue the Annie and Mary Trail, Humboldt County. Hank Seaman is going to be speaking about finally connecting the final 4 miles between Arcata and Eureka. And then, of course, there's the Great Redwood Trail. So Senator Mike McGuire will be there, as well as the new director of the new Great Redwood Trail agency that's in charge of this exciting visionary project of linking Humboldt Bay ultimately with 307 miles of rail all the way down to the Bay Area. So it's a lot going on.
With trail developments in the works across the county, she hopes all can attend.
Anybody who cares about connecting communities with non-motorized vehicles, so sort of expanding our view of what it means to get from place to place rather than being so reliant on cars, having trails that help connect people to schools, to other recreational opportunities. Everybody should have a stake in how we become healthier, more active, reduce greenhouse gases, and socially connect communities.
You can submit questions in advance to Trail Summit at humtrails.org.
Doors open at 9:30. The presentations begin at 10:30. There'll also be the Trail Resource Fair will continue until 1. And I think you can go to the humtrails.org, which is the website of the Humboldt Trails Council, is really taking the lead in planning this. And on that website, you can also find ways that you can submit your trail moments, your questions, you know, those types of things, even if you can't come on Saturday. But I think it's a great way to kind of find your people, find the way that you can plug in and support developing a regional trail system to support active transportation in our area.
More details about the event are also available online at humtrails.org. Turning to Mendocino, KMUD's Matt LaFever brings the latest headlines from Mendocino County, where a story of a stolen American flag was just a big misunderstanding, and a brawl sent a juvenile to the hospital in this report.
This is Matt LaFever with the headlines out of Mendocino County for Thursday, May 30th, 2024. We begin today's coverage in the small town of Willits, California, with what appeared to be a troubling incident, which actually turned out to be a big misunderstanding. This past weekend, during a Memorial Day ceremony on South Main Street, an American flag was proudly raised. The ceremony was organized by the American Legion, local Boy Scouts, and the Willits Chamber of Commerce, and drew hundreds of community members. The event featured moving performances by bagpipes, the Star Spangled Banner played, setting a poignant tone for the day. It also served as a prelude to the 42nd annual Willits Car and Bike Show. Early Tuesday morning, May 28th, just a day after, it was discovered that the flag raised during the ceremony was missing. One community member said, "This is a dishonor to the principle the flag represents and a disheartening act against our community's spirit," unquote. The Willits police were notified. However, today we have learned that the flag was not stolen. In fact, it was all a misunderstanding. City workers who had been tasked with putting up flags had inadvertently replaced the flag on the old Rexall flagpole, which didn't actually need replacing. The honor guard, after their ceremonial duties, put the city flag back up. A city worker collected the flag on Tuesday, not realizing the confusion it would cause. The city workers will be presenting the flag and its storage box to the police department, effectively closing this case. While the community experienced a moment of collective dismay, this incident highlights the profound respect and care the people of Willits have for their symbols and ceremonies. Now let's turn to Hopland, where yesterday afternoon a vegetation fire broke out west of the town proper, causing concern as it threatened nearby structures. The fire was located near the 4500 block of Feliz Creek Road in a state resource area. The incident commander from Hopland Fire described the blaze as initially spanning 1.5 to 2 acres and burning at a slow rate of spread. In response, a helicopter, 2 state fire engines, and a hand crew were dispatched to the scene. At approximately 6:22, there was a positive update. The incident commander reported that fire crews had successfully laid hose around the fire and halted its forward progress. The last update of the night, the incident commander confirmed that the total acreage of the fire, referred to as the Eagle Incident, was 1.67 acres. Thankfully, fire crews on ground and in air managed to contain the blaze before it caused significant damage. Now let's turn to the Mendocino Coast, where over the holiday weekend, scientists and enthusiasts gathered on Big River Beach for the inaugural North Coast Kelp Fest, a celebration and educational event focusing on kelp, urchins, and their role in the marine ecosystem. This 3-week festival featured art, film, food, walkabouts, and science talks every weekend until June 16th. The festival is the brainchild of Marianne Luchel, a key organizer of the Above Below campaign aimed at increasing awareness of marine life. Luchel, who has lived on the coast for 18 years, learned about the drastic decline in kelp in 2020 and was shocked by how little the community knew about it. Since then, awareness has grown. The California coast has lost 96% of its seaweed canopy due to marine ecosystem imbalances, primarily caused by the loss of the sunflower sea star, a predator of the purple urchin. These urchins, unchecked, graze on kelp, causing significant ecological damage. Bennett Bugby, a graduate student at Moss Landing Marine Labs, has been working on kelp restoration off the Mendocino Coast since 2021. Scientists have developed methods to encourage bull kelp to reproduce in the lab and have experimented with planting these reproductive spores, known as sori, in restoration areas. This year, a pilot study will begin at Portuguese Beach, part of the Mendocino Headland State Park, with the goal of restoring 5 acres in the next 2 years. Rachel Carm, a research technician at Sonoma State University, explained that keeping kelp away from urchins is crucial, as they thrive on rocks but avoid sand. To learn more about Kelp Fest events in Fort Bragg and Mendocino, many of which are free, visit northcoastkelpfest.org. And that's the latest from Mendocino County. I'm Matt Lefevre in Hopland, reporting for KMUD News.
In national news, on Wednesday, May 29th, KMUD got an opportunity to speak with our representative for the North Coast, Congressman Jared Huffman, in this interview. Good afternoon, Congressman Huffman, and thank you for joining me. Our country and democracy seem to be facing unprecedented times, so I'd like to open today's check-in with an overview and update on what's been unfolding.
Well, thanks, Lauren. It's good to be back with you. And you're right, there is just so much in the balance right now. Consequential stuff, like, you know, the future of our democracy and, you know, will we see it replaced by a theocracy? What does it mean for our role in the world stage as a global leader if our alliances disintegrate and if Russia prevails in Ukraine and China, gets an idea to go after Taiwan or North Korea and South Korea. All of this is so high stakes and ominous, and it just underscores what an important moment this is. I will tell you, as somebody in the trenches representing this district, it's not a pleasant time to be in the arena, but it's an incredibly important one, and that's what keeps me pretty motivated to get up every day.
The big national news is former President Donald Trump's criminal trial. What are your key takeaways, and how do you expect the jury to rule?
Yeah, so I haven't been hanging on every detail of this trial like, you know, apparently some Americans. And I have discouraged people from doing that because I'm not sure it's totally healthy. And I think, you know, even those of us, you know, like me, I mean, I'm a huge detractor of Donald Trump. I think he's the worst person in the world. But I want the justice system to play out. I don't play the, you know, lock them up game with the rule of law and the justice system. So I've kind of tried to refrain from saying anything that suggests I'm trying to get ahead of the legal process, and we'll just see where it goes. But I'm also an old trial lawyer. And to the extent I have followed this, I've seen an awful lot of compelling evidence coming in. It's obviously, you know, not hard to find one juror to hang things and prevent a conviction, but this evidence is pretty one-sided in my assessment. And I guess I will be surprised if there's not a conviction on at least some of the charges. You know, where that takes us, I don't know. And I think there's plenty of worry about in that regard, since, you know, Donald Trump has sort of cultivated this this ethos of a political party that never accepts defeat and will do whatever it takes to get its way. That's worrisome.
You mentioned the justice system, which has also been in the news, as Supreme Court Justice Alito tells Congress that he will not recuse himself from January 6 related cases, despite being revealed that he flew two controversial flags that signal the movement to overtake democracy and replace it with a theocracy. Do you think he should be recused from all church and state separation cases that come before the Supreme Court?
Totally. Yeah, and I am really beginning to speak out on that as the chair of the Freethought Caucus in the Congress. This was not just a controversial flag. This appeal to heaven flag that he flew for 2 months at his summer home in New Jersey is the most visible symbol of the extreme Christian nationalist movement that was, you know, the heart and soul of the January 6th insurrection. These are folks that openly call for theocracy, that have our democracy in the crosshairs, that want to replace it with a Bible-based republic. And I mean, they're not even subtle about these things. They just come right out and say it. The guy who popularized this appeal to heaven flag is a Christian nationalist pastor named Dutch Sheets. And he claims to have actually created Justice Alito. He claims that his prayers and prophetic decrees created the vacancy on the Supreme Court that George W. Bush used to fill with both Chief Justice Roberts and Alito. And so, you know, Alito has certainly answered those prayers and has been the driving force behind a bunch of decisions that roll back church-state separation, that basically read the Establishment Clause out of the Constitution. And now I guess what strikes me about these latest episodes is there's just so much impunity. He just feels untouchable, that he can fly these flags from his home. And the one in New Jersey at his beach house, you've probably seen the picture. It was a three-flag kind of array with the appeal to heaven at the very top, very prominent. And, you know, there's nothing accidental about flying that particular flag. Nobody even knows about that flag unless they are part of this extreme Christian nationalist movement that sort of rediscovered it as this forgotten relic of the Revolutionary War era and then began promoting it as the symbol for their cause. So this is not innocent. It's extremely sinister, and it speaks to the kind of corruption and impunity that we have, unfortunately, on the Supreme Court right now.
Turning to another court, the International Criminal Court. Prosecutors requested arrest warrants for Benjamin Netanyahu and Hamas leaders, which sparked outrage from the prime minister. And more recently, the White House has opposed a Republican bill to sanction the ICC. What is your take on the ICC's ruling and the move from the White House?
Yeah, so I don't know yet if there will be an arrest warrant issued, but I do know that we shouldn't be meddling in the middle of proceedings where international law is playing out. It would have to be a very compelling situation for us to do something like that. And I am for letting the international court, run its course. I'm very concerned about some of the targeting and warfighting decisions that Israel has made. Now, some of the information we get is maybe not totally reliable. This is war. And in the fog of war, the facts are a casualty usually, but we can certainly see enough from the footage and from some of the international organizations that are on the ground to cause me concern that there is a big problem with this war plan. And so I am for really dialing up the pressure from the United States. We're the only country that can really bring it for Israel to back off and reconsider the way it is going after Hamas. I think they have an absolute right to go after Hamas. While we're talking about all of these bad things Israel is doing, Hamas continues to launch rockets and to hold hostages and to give every indication that it will hang on and come back and engage in more terrorist acts. So they need to be brought to account as well. But I want to end this terrible war. It's just heart-wrenching in every way. There's not consensus on exactly how to end it, but it's horrible and it needs to end.
That brings me to my next question. John Kirby, the United States National Security Council coordinator, says that the United States believes that ground operations are not warranted in Rafah. However, despite providing billions of dollars in funding, the United States is unable to sway or influence Prime Minister Netanyahu and his far-right cabinet. An analysis in the Israeli publication Haaretz suggests that Netanyahu does not want the war in Gaza to end. So it poses the question, will this war end and how and what happens afterwards?
Yeah, I worry about all of it. Certainly the United States has more leverage than anyone else to demand those changes. But this war cabinet of Netanyahu's is really conservative and extreme. And some of them, frankly, are Jewish supremacists that are openly calling for the reestablishment of settlements and outposts and the removal of Palestinians from Gaza. They're already doing much of that in the West Bank. And I am appalled by all of it. So, there are a number of tools available to us. You would think at some point that the importance of the U.S. relationship to Israel would be taken seriously enough that Israel would change course, the current government. But this current government is extreme, and Netanyahu himself is really compromised. It may be that drawing out this war and using it, politicizing it, is the way he keeps himself out of prison. And that's a terrible spot for us as well. So I certainly want him gone. I agree with Chuck Schumer that Netanyahu should be removed by the people of Israel. There should be an election. There should be a new leader. And I think if we can build some pressure for that, we will see a more humane and sensible strategy from them. And I'm also worried that they don't have a day after strategy here. There will continue to be a residual of Hamas no matter what. And if Israel has no plan for how to bring peace to that region, how to support a Palestinian state, if they assume they're going to be able to just, maintain a military occupation, then this is not going to end. And it could be a forever war. So I'm really worried about all of these things. There are no simple solutions that I can see, but that is the disturbing landscape I'm trying to sort through.
Again, that was our representative for the North Coast, Congressman Jared Huffman. If you have questions for our representative, you can email them to news@kema.org. After speaking with Congressman Huffman, there were updates in Donald Trump's criminal case. After 10 hours of deliberation, a jury of 12 New Yorkers found former President Donald Trump guilty on all 34 counts of felony falsification of business records in his criminal hush money trial. The charges stem from a payment made to an adult film star, Stormy Daniels, during the final days of the 2016 presidential election to cover up a sex scandal. Trump was convicted on Thursday, marking a historic verdict in a trial that tested the resilience of the American justice system and will have significant implications for the upcoming election. His sentencing is scheduled for July 11th. That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Lisa Music. And thanks to our reporter, Matt Lefevre. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Lauren Schmidt.